Birth, the Grand Division, Chapter 37. Not even memory prepares you for the first breath of Saudi air when you step off that plane. Jeddah is a port city as old as the earth itself, it seemed. The buildings and cranes and trucks were modern enough, but the smell of camels and body odor must have been here since the beginning of time. The heat sucked the moisture of the Red Sea into another dimension, as well as any perspiration you might dream of making. It takes a new mentality based upon carrying a 2-liter bottle of water at all times and remembering to drink from it every few minutes. Once you cross the threshold of dehydration, you stop thinking clearly. A moment of daydreaming is hoped for, like a goat lagging behind the herd by the jackals of Jeddah. Boris smiled as the customs agents handed him a pre-signed stamp to put into his passport. It would be 2 days before the Moor arrived in Jeddah. It was enough time to blend and to spot any CIA. He wasn't a tourist and didn't look like one. He hefted his shoulder bag off the customs scanner belt and found a crowd to join as they moved toward the curb lined with taxis and buses. He put his hand in his front left pocket and thumbed the rial bills to make sure he could get a single bill out at a time rather than palming the whole amount in the open. 1 rial is worth about 4 times that of the American dollar. It was the best grease in the Middle East. The rules in Saudi Arabia are severe for locals and for immigrants from countries like Somalia or Yemen. Russians are seen as better allies than Americans by the average person. He could speak Arabic, but speaking English with a Russian accent was often a ticket to a free Turkish coffee in most places. There was not much drinking in Saudi Arabia, as it was a temptation to the locals. There is nothing on the planet as obnoxious as a drunken Arab, and the royals must have known this when they wrote the rules by which they live. He reached his hotel room in less than an hour and twisted the air conditioner to get the room down to below 90 degrees. His nostrils had still not adjusted to the smell of the country, and he could tell thousands of bodies had sweated through the night in this room. He cracked the seal on the first bottle of water provided with the room and began to unpack for the week's work. The time zone was very close to that of Kazakhstan, so he planned to work into the cool of the night before coming back to his room. He kept his cell phone off and encrypted to the max, so his arrival at the transportation company surprised the dispatcher as he entered the open office door from the sidewalk. "My name is Boris. We talked by email about moving a container from the port to your warehouse for stripping," he said. "You are a day early, Habibi," said the small man behind the old gray surplus desk. "Actually, I'm 2 days early. I just want to make sure you have the right equipment and that your people are well taken care of," said Boris, using slight hand gestures to calm the nervous man. "Yes, yes, we have the right equipment. They will set the container on our trailer, and we will bring it here to our yard. We will have a nice tractor to haul it over the road, just the way you requested. It should be no problem," said the man, smiling and adjusting the cloth on his head. Boris noticed he used his thumb and 2 fingers on both hands to crease it off-center along the right side of his head. This was meant to make a map of the Levant, restored to its Muslim ownership without the existence of Israel. "I stopped by to talk to the operator, the driver, you know. Our product is to be delivered without damage to the royal family. It must be perfect," said Boris. "This is not a problem, Habibi. You can follow me, please. Let's meet the men who will handle your shipment. We have been here for more than 100 years, you know. My family is the best in Jeddah, I can tell you that," said the dispatcher. His accent was strong, but his English showed many years of British influence. He knew the game, and he knew there would likely never be any repeat business, so there was one time to earn the best profit possible. "Your family has a good name in Jeddah. I checked," said Boris. "Acknowledgement from a foreign land is the highest endorsement for an Arab." "Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. "This is our fork truck driver, Hamdi," he said, placing his hand on Boris's lower back and holding out his other hand to make the introduction. Touching a person with one hand is common in Saudi Arabia, but never high on the body. Such a move would be seen as condescending and insulting. "It is a pleasure to meet you," said Boris, reaching out to shake the man's hand. Thank you, sir," said the driver. "And this is our dock driver. He will bring the container from the dock crane to our building here," said the dispatcher. "I'm sorry, sir, he speaks no English." "I am pleased to meet you," said Boris in almost perfect Arabic. The middle-aged driver smiled to reveal only a partial set of teeth, but held out his hand to shake that of Boris. "I am Ezat," he said. Boris continued to walk with the dispatcher through the large open side warehouse. "Where is the rig that will haul the crates to the royal quarters in Mecca and then on to Medina?" asked Boris. "It is not here today. It will return in the morning. My brother drives it. You'll like it. Very new and well-respected in the country. Everybody knows us," he said. "I will return tomorrow to see it and speak with your brother," said Boris. "Would you do me a favor, Habibi?" "Yes, sir. Whatever you wish," said the dispatcher. "Would you make sure you and your men have a good meal with their families tonight?" as Boris placed 50 rial in his hand as he held it. He knew the dispatcher would keep it all unless Boris requested it. "Yes, sir. I will make sure. Thank you, sir," said the dispatcher, smiling. It was not so much as to make them miss a couple of days' work celebrating their wealth, but it was enough to let them know there would be greater amounts with a successful delivery. No one took for granted a tomorrow in the Middle East. Boris climbed back into his waiting cab and took a long drink from his water bottle. "The Raffles Makkah Palace," he said. He could see the cab driver's eyes in the rearview mirror. They were searching with suspicion. "I can take you to the door. No problem," said the cab driver. "Perfect. Can you wait for me?" asked Boris. "I can drive around. There is no waiting at the palace. Depending on traffic, it could take an hour to make it once around. It is the time of the Hajj, you know," he said. "Okay. I have to check on some things. I'll be out on the curb after 1 hour," said Boris. "Yes, sir. Perfect, sir. I will watch for you," he said. He knew if he was there, he would receive a good tip from Boris. Russians were always generous. Traffic was slow in the baking sun of the late afternoon. There were tour buses everywhere, and the city police directed traffic at every light to make sure the tourists got to their destinations. Hundreds of millions in revenue would be made this week in Mecca and also in Medina. The only strange thing to behold was the almost complete absence of women. The buses, the hotels, the cabs, and the sidewalks were populated with almost nothing but men. There were no families to be seen anywhere. Normally, more than 1 million tourists would flood into Mecca the week of the Hajj. As this one was suspected to be the last, there were 3 million tourists standing or sitting on every available square foot of real estate in Mecca. The driver inched his way forward as the cabs ahead of him emptied their passengers in front of the Raffles Makkah Palace. It was the most expensive 5-star hotel in Mecca and just steps from the Kaaba. It contained an entire floor of one of the towers, with the royal quarters, utilized by the members of the family that controlled nearly half of the country's wealth. It was still crowded with wealthy businessmen from all over the world who wanted the opulence of being in proximity of the most powerful men on earth. Boris slid out of the back seat and placed a 20-rial note in the driver's hand. "See you in 1 hour," he said. "Count on me, sir. I will be here, God willing," said the cab driver. It was a habitual excuse for an Arab to add this one clause at the end of any promise to deliver anything. If they happened to be late, which was often the case, everyone knew it was God's will. Boris walked through the ground floor to the concierge's desk. "I would like to see your logistics manager to make the final arrangements for a delivery in 2 days." "Certainly, sir," said the tall man at the desk. He picked up the phone, pressed a few keys, and waited. After a short exchange, he hung up the phone and smiled. "He will come here, to this desk, and meet you. 3 minutes," he said, holding up 3 fingers. "Would you like a bottle of water?" "No, thank you. I'm still working on this one," said Boris as he unscrewed the top and took another drink. The lobby was crowded with people from every nationality that he could see. He heard French, German, and even English from different areas of the very ornately decorated palace lobby. It was remarkably cool for a room this size in the heart of Mecca, one of the oldest cities in Saudi Arabia. He marveled at the amount of air conditioning and electricity it must take to keep the building 50 degrees cooler than the outside. It was the finest hotel in the city, but still the amount of engineering it took to shield the interior from the Sahara's hottest desert winds was impressive. "Hello, sir," said the large man in a khaki shirt with green trousers as he approached. "I am Mahmoud Alameddine," he said, extending his right hand. Boris gripped it firmly and put on his bureaucratic face. "Boris Domashev, I am here with Sunsport to make sure everything is in proper order to receive the royal equipment." "Of course, of course. What would you like to know?" asked Mahmoud. "I would like to see the loading dock area. We will need a space to uncrate the equipment and a way to deliver these world-class whirlpools to the royal suite," said Boris. "Yes, no problem. Come with me and I will get you an ID badge from security and then take you back to the loading and parking area," said Mahmoud. The two of them walked to the security office where a few phone calls were made. A plastic ID badge was issued and Boris's fingerprints were taken, along with a scan of his passport. They were thorough. He was pleased with the level of caution. After all, there were at least 5 nations that wanted to kill as many members of the royal family as possible. There were over 14,000 members, but only the top 300 or so would ever see any level of responsibility or receive the staggering monthly stipend of the top genealogy. "Please follow me, Mr. Boris," said Mahmoud. They walked through 2 separate doors, each guarded with a soldier armed with a Tech-9 submachine gun and a wireless headset. They went down 2 flights of stairs and then entered a large interior unloading area. "This is where you can uncrate your equipment. There is 10,000 square feet here, electrical outlets for charging tools, and there are trash compactors for cardboard and open-top dumpsters for disposables," he said, pointing to 2 different areas. "We have 2 electric forklifts on duty 24 hours a day, and the ground access roll-up door is the last one down on the end." He opened the man door by the first roll-up door, and the heat was oppressive as they stepped out onto the covered tarmac. "Your shipping container can back up to any of these 6 docks, and the forklift can unload the crates," he said, as they stepped back into the building. They walked over to the receiving desk, and Mahmoud accessed the computer for a few minutes. He stood by the printer and grabbed the 2 sheets of paper that came out. "Very important, Mr. Boris," he said as he handed the 2 sheets to him. "Your driver must have his shipper, the manifest, and these 2 documents, which he should have been emailed. If he does not have these 4 pieces of paper, he will not get past the barricades outside the grounds. He could be subject to arrest, and your cargo can be seized and destroyed. Do you understand this as I have explained it to you?" "Yes," said Boris. He remembered visiting American facilities set up in Europe. He always marveled at how easy it would have been to attack them with anything in disguise. He was impressed with the level of security they employed to protect their city. He breathed a chuckle as he judged that there would not be 1 single block lying atop another when the warheads exploded. He made an effort to block that thought from his mind, as he knew holding a secret inside your eyelids will soon not be a secret. He had highly developed skills to be able to see something being withheld by just such a person. "Thank you, Mahmoud. I am satisfied our shipment will be securely handled and delivered. See you in 2 days, he said, shaking Mahmoud's hand as they walked through the 2 guarded doors. Mr. Boris, said Mahmoud, nodding a goodbye and taking his cell phone out of his pocket and turning away to answer it. It was nearly dark outside when his cab came back around. He drank the last of his water and tossed the bottle into one of the many sidewalk trash containers. It was against the law to litter in the city. He sat down in the air-conditioned back seat and told the driver where to go. Within half an hour, they had slugged their way through the traffic and arrived at his hotel. He thumbed a couple more 10-rial notes out and handed them to the driver. You keep the change, okay? Said Boris. Yes, sir. Very good, sir. Are you needing me tomorrow? Asked the driver. Tomorrow. I will rest. But the following day... I need transportation to the docks, and then to the trucking company, and to the hotel again, said Boris. Yes, sir. I will be your driver. No problem, sir, said the driver. What is your name? Asked Boris. My name? Yes, sir. My name is Mohammed. No one ever asked my name, sir. Not before, he said. You have a family, Mohammed? Asked Boris. Yes, sir. I've 2 daughters. I cannot read, but my oldest is in the university. And my youngest wants to be a doctor. I work very hard for this. Boris opened the door and climbed out into the already cooling Arab night. He leaned into the open door. I will see you in 2 days at noon sharp, yes? Yes, sir. 1 day of rest, and I will be here noon sharp, God willing, said Mohammed. You be here, even if he tries to stop you, okay? Asked Boris. Yes, sir. I will be here, said Mohammed, smiling. He had earned 3 times what the cab company paid him to drive today. He wondered if he should wash his car and maybe wash the seats when he got back to the dispatch yard. He looked in the mirror at his eyes. You did well today, he said to himself. Boris walked into his room and noticed the improvement in the smell. He noticed the sheets had been changed, even though he had not slept on the bed yet. Maybe it was the bedspread that was new. He turned on the TV and let the Arabic news station become the background of his solitary confinement. He had planned on sleeping early, but the day had gone far better than expected, and there was no one to scold tomorrow, so he decided to walk out to the front desk. "Excuse me," he said to the man behind the desk. "Yes, sir. What can I do for you?" asked the man. "I would like a light meal and some vodka." Is there such a place in Jeddah? He asked. Yes, sir. On the 3rd floor, in the north corner, there is an international restaurant, he said. Perfect. I really didn't feel like driving again today, said Boris, waving his hand over his shoulder as he walked toward the elevator. He arrived at the restaurant, which was about half full. There were several high tables near the window, and he pulled out a chair to sit down at one of them. The hostess came over to meet him. She was tall and thin, with dense, curly black hair and a very light brown skin tone. "Good evening, sir. Will you be dining with us tonight?" she asked in smooth English. "Da, I think so. Do you have kufta here?" he asked, too tired to manage without a strong Russian accent. "Of course, yes. I think it is the best in the city, in my opinion," she said in fluent Russian with an accent. "And mautabel, you have this as well?" he asked. "Oh, now you have chosen my favorite," she said, smiling broadly. "A serving for one, sir?" "Yes, for one. And could I trouble you for some good vodka as well?" he asked. "Yes, sir. We have beluga here if you prefer the best Russian vodka," she said, dancing her head from side to side, letting her hair slide across her shoulders. Boris looked up with a startled look on his face. He could see the city lights behind him through the windows sparkling in her black eyes. Her teeth were large and straight, and she wore no makeup. Still, the dark lashes above and below her eyes made them jump off her coffee cream skin. It was impossible to find a woman in Saudi Arabia who would express her opinion or speak to a man without another man at her side as an escort. But it was when she said beluga vodka that his heart skipped a beat. Yes, a half a liter would be fine, and a shot glass if you have one, he said distantly. Of course. With your meal, or would you like it now? She asked without looking away. You can bring it now. Thank you, he said. She returned a few minutes later with a small tray, a shot glass, and 500 milliliters of vodka. The silver whale and words "Noble Vodka" on the front of the clear bottle were unmistakable. She set them on the table. There you are, sir. I put in your order. It will be a few minutes. Enjoy the view of the city, she said. Boris. My name is Boris, he said, sliding the cork out of the bottle. My name is Manar, she said. He poured a shot glass and held it up to toast her. Nice to meet you, Manar. I'll be back with your order soon, she said, doing her best not to respond to Boris's courtesy. Saudi Arabia is a place where women have no rights. Some places in some cities were more moderate, in that they let women work with the public, like in this restaurant. Jeddah was a few miles from Mecca, and it was not a tourist attraction. It was a port town from the days of Jesus. Saudi Arabia is about the same size as Iran, which up until 1938 was called Persia. The Shah decided to show unwavering support for Hitler and changed the name to the Arab name for Aryan, Iran. The two nations had clashed many times over the differences between Shia and Sunni Islam. Zealots soaked in the idea that Muslim men owned all women on the earth, and the use of the sword as a method of proselytization kept 54 nations in some state of war for more than 1,400 years. It was the fear of being spied upon and accused by a jealous man that kept women in check. Appraised as some of the most beautiful and exotic women in the world, Arab women suffered from generations of oppression. They were naturally more relaxed around foreign men, but the last thing Boris wanted was to get this lovely woman in trouble with her community. The fact that she did not cover her hair and that she showed her bare arms was a statement of her Lebanese strength. The first couple of shots of vodka went down smoothly, and he could feel the relaxation of the 80-proof fluid releasing its alcohol instantly into his bloodstream. Within a few minutes, Manar brought a tray with a dish of the maotabal, chickpea and eggplant dip. It was a much spicier alternative to hummus. There was also a small steaming plate of the kafta, spiced lamb on four wooden skewers and covered in parsley. Boris poured another shot of vodka, sniffing the spicy aroma of the kafta. He swallowed the shot of vodka and exhaled through his mouth and bit off a piece of the kafta. He took a small piece of the hard, flat bread from the basket and broke off a piece to drag through the maotabal. The taste was exquisite. He leaned against a swivel chair and looked out over the cooling Jeddah night over the busy streets and the lights of the buildings. He thought for a moment that for thousands of years boats had been docking here and trading with the people. There were family lines perhaps 100 generations long without ever traveling more than 50 miles in any direction. It struck him that the money from this one nation directly or indirectly fueled 90% of the violence and death around the world for more than 1,000 years. Ice began to flow into his veins from a special place in the darkness of his soul. He rolled the shot glass between his thumb and fingers and reached to pour another shot. "Will there be anything else? My shift is about to end," said Manar as she approached his table again. "No, I don't think so. You can bring me the check, but I'd like to sit and enjoy this for a while, if I may." "Of course, sir, Boris. Stay as long as you like. I am going home now. Tomorrow is a school day." "University?" asked Boris. "No, my kids. I get them off to school, and my husband is there when they get home. He works the late shift at the docks as the crane operator," she said. "Of course. You can bring that check any time," said Boris. She returned a minute later with the check, and he looked at her again. She was young and vibrant, and her husband was hard-working and skilled. their kids might be able to escape this country one day. He added a 50 rial tip and smiled at her. You take care of that family, and remember, there is a great world out there, he said. Oh, there is a greater world coming soon, she said. I can feel it, she said. The separation? He asked. The new world will be glorious, she said with a peaceful energy he had never seen before. Christian? He asked. Secretly. I can't wait to leave this cold and gray world behind, she said. Good luck to you, and keep the change, he said, handing the tray back to her. Yes, sir. Thank you so much, she said, looking down at the 70 rials on the tray. With that, she walked away to the central register to sign out and gather her tips for the night. Boris poured another shot, sniffed the kofta, and swallowed without moving his gaze from the city lights of Jeddah.